Support for KNKX comes from WSECU, now offering 3 new Visa credit cards and 3 new checking accounts, with benefits that fit a variety of lifestyles and financial needs. More information is available at WSECU.org. WSECU, serving Washington since 1957.
Hey, it's Gabriel Spitzer, and you're listening to Sound Effect from KNKX. In this midweek episode of our podcast, we are grabbing a story and spinning it out a little bit, talking about the backstory behind it and so on. This last week, our theme was money talks, and that was a kind of clumsy way to be cute about trying to raise some money because this is the fall fund drive for our station, KNKX. If you want to go donate, you can do that at knkx.org. But it put me in the mind of another time when we had our hands out begging a little bit, and this was when we were saving the station. If you don't know that whole thing, I'll spell it out for you a little bit after this story. But this was from a live show that Sound Effect put on at Town Hall to help fundraise to save our radio station. And the guest is Seattle-based singer-songwriter Kimya Dawson. And it's, even though it was on a stage in front of 400 or 500 people, it's probably one of the most intimate conversations I think I've ever had. So let's give it a listen right here from Sound Effect on KNKX. It's kind of a cliche of our business that radio is a very intimate medium because, I mean, it is. We are with you in some of the most personal times and spaces in your life. We are there in your bedroom, and we are there in your car, and we are there in your water closet, probably. And it is. I mean, we're talking to you right in your ear holes, man. Well, our next guest, Kimya Dawson, her music is incredibly intimate, so intimate that it feels like it's coming from inside your own head sometimes. I want to just crib something from a 10-year-old bio on K Records because I just find it so apropos. They wrote that her recordings make it feel as though you have a friend there with you whispering in your ear, and you do, because Kimya is your friend. Well, she's coming through for her friends in a really big way tonight, and she's going to join us in conversation and to play a little bit of music. Ladies and gentlemen, our full-time friend, Kimya Dawson. Hey, Kimya.
Hi.
Welcome.
That's a lot of people.
I know, right? Very strange. So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about what your life was like growing up, and specifically I wanted to talk to you about how you kind of fit into your family's ecosystem as you were growing up. What role did you play?
Well, I was a middle child, the only daughter, so I have an older brother and a younger brother. And when I was, my younger brother's 4 years younger than me, and when he was a baby, he got really, really sick. And for a while, nobody knew what was wrong with him. And so there was this period of time where he was in the hospital, and it was really scary. And I was just like, I can try to make everybody happy. You know, and my mom had a rough go at things when she was growing up, and that was never a secret in our family, that her family life was hard. And so I always wanted to make her happy and have her not feel scared and just make everybody feel okay. I wanted to protect my little brother because I had thought he was gonna die. I had been prepared for that, and I wanted to take care of everyone.
And how, did that stick with you? I mean, how did that shape the person that you developed into as an adolescent and then as a young adult? I mean, did you still think of yourself as the person whose job it was to make other people feel better?
Oh, yeah. I definitely was just like, I am strong enough to hold it together and make sure everyone else is okay. And when I was in middle school, I became best friends with a girl whose older sister was killed. She was hit by a train. And my number one crush was the boy whose both of his parents had died. And like I was like drawn to people who had just had these like huge tragedies, and I just wanted to make everything okay for them all the time.
So how did it start to become clear to you that that role has a cost?
That's becoming clear to me now. At 43. I devoted a lot of high school to, like, we had to do, like, 30 hours of community service to graduate high school, and I did, like, 975 hours working in soup kitchens and homeless shelters and doing other street outreach work. And I was really devoted to doing that type of service work. And then I did a lot of activism. My first year in college, I was in Boston, and my older brother was made active duty and sent over for the first Gulf War in the Marine Corps. And so I was doing a lot of protesting and activism. And then I transferred to Evergreen, and I was doing activism down there. And then at some point, I got kicked out for activism. And but then I just kind of, like, I hit this wall where I was just like, oh, I can't save the world. Like, they're not letting me save the world. And so I started drinking a lot. And then had some really destructive years that ended with a coma. And so 17 years ago, I, you know, went to treatment and quit drinking, and then the following weekend was the first Moldy Peaches show, and the first songs that I had written were about feeling awkward and stuff like that. And so then kids would come up to me afterwards and be like, whoa, like, I haven't really heard anybody say, like, I feel fat and awkward, you know, like, in a song before, and like, this boy doesn't want to talk to me. And so I was like, whoa, you feel like that too, you know? And so then that, it kind of just morphed how I could make people feel better. And then it created this sort of illusion for me. Well, it wasn't an illusion because it really helped, but like, I would have these kids come up to me and say like, oh, you feel like this. And there were these states of being that I thought, you know, my whole life that I had been alone in, you know, and just like, oh, I'm an alien, like, and then, so people would come up and tell me they felt like that too, and then that would make me feel better, you know, and so I was like, oh, if I tell you I feel like then you'll tell me you feel like and then we both feel better, because we're not the only person that feels like you know, and so that was really great, and it, like, you know, helped me stay sober and helped me connect with people. But then it sort of became, over time, the type of thing. And I guess because, too, in the beginning, I didn't have email, you know? And so as, like, musicians become more accessible and start touring more, and then there's more people who want to tell you their story, and it's really heavy, you know, and so it's like, I'm still that little kid that's like, I gotta fix them all, you know, and so like, I'm getting like these emails, and after every show, there's like a line of people out the door who are just like, my mom has cancer, or I'm like 1 week sober, or like, my dad died last night, like, seriously, like every show, and I'm just like, I will hug you all, you know, and then realizing like, I'm absorbing all of this grief, like day after day after day, and then it got to the point where like, it just became like this codependency, and like, I have to take care of everybody, I have to take care of everybody, and then recognizing that I wasn't even taking care of myself, and that I didn't even know how, you know, and that I would like have all these answers for everyone, But like, I didn't really know the answers. You know, it's like I could read like a million self-help books and like spew out all this crap, but it's like I didn't really know what I was talking about because I couldn't apply it.
So what do you...
I still want to fix everybody, though. I love you. Like, and, but it's just, yeah.
Yeah, and there's a, you know, that same K Records bio, it's a very incisive bio writer, wrote something like that your music makes it feel like you need us just as much as we need you. And I wonder how that feels from your end.
I think that's very true. But at the same time, like what I've been learning, it's like so hard because I do wish I could save everybody, you know? And it's like I told you when we were talking the other day, there's like a girl who called me once and she was like, my mom's a drug dealer. Her boyfriend is, you know, got her into this. I have a little brother. I just turned 18. Our house is about to be raided. And since I'm 18, if I get caught, and she was like, and I'm an addict, if I get caught, I'm gonna go to jail because there's a minor in the house. And so I drove to her house and I picked her up and I drove her to rehab. And then she wrote to me later and was like, you saved my life. And then like 5 years later, she died of an OD. And it's just like, I saved you, oh, you know? And I just feel like my heart just breaks over and over again. And then I end up being really depressed, you know? And I feel like what I've been realizing is that, like, I have stuff from when I was 4 years old that I've squashed in there so tight. And instead of looking at the stuff that makes me sad or that was making my mom sad, I just, like, look at everybody else's stuff. And I'm like, it's within my control to tell you what you should do, you know? And so what I've been trying to do lately is, like, get to the root of, like, my stuff and just, like, I still want to, like, fix everybody else, but I've realized that I have to have boundaries, which is really hard, you know?
Sounds like a new concept.
It's so hard. But just like there's some nights on tour where I'm just like, I hear somebody like, I want to hug you after I play. And I'm like, I'm sorry. Like, I have to sit here. And, you know, it's like that self-care piece is so hard.
Have you learned one piece of that you are getting good at? Are you able to find some way to create some space for yourself or find some way to take care of yourself that comes a little easier now?
It's such a messed up balance because it's like I try to be like, I need boundaries and I need to take time for myself. And then I'm like, I'm isolating. And so I never know like if I'm taking care of myself or if I'm like unhealthily afraid of the world and like hiding in my apartment alone. And I'm just like, oh no. What's healthy? And then I'm like, maybe I'd feel better if I started working at a soup kitchen again. And then I'm like, oh, wait, like maybe I'd feel better if I went to therapy 7 days a week. Like, I just don't know. But I'm working on it. But if I don't respond to your email, it's not because I don't love you. It's because I love you too much. I love you so much it's killing me.
That's Kimia Dawson speaking at our Sound Effect live event from several years ago at Town Hall in Seattle. And Kimia stuck around for a little bit to join us for a song, and we're going to play that for you now in its entirety. And if you don't have any Kleenex handy, you might want to grab some.
This is a song about something that happened when I was little. And I realized, I was just on tour in Europe for 3 weeks, and I realized on that tour that the year that this incident happened was the year that Purple Rain came out. And sometimes when I get long emails from people where I'm like, oh, this is really heavy, then I always say to myself, this is the Sting letter, because when I was in high school, I wrote a really long letter to Sting. But I didn't send it. But I always have to remember where I was at, you know, where I was just like, imagine, now I imagine Sting being like, wow, she really loved that cat, you know? And this is a little bit about how Elton John helped too. And I think about all the ways that like Sting and Elton John and like Phil Collins and like all the soft rock that I was really into, like how all those people had such a big effect on me, even though I didn't have direct access to them all the time. And then I like to think maybe on the days that I can't respond to people, that maybe I'm still helping somehow. I was 12 and things had been pretty okay up till then. The only deaths I'd experienced were of pets and the grandparents of my friends. I was aimed gifted and talented till right around the 7th grade. But that is when everything changed and I had to flip a switch and shut off my brain. 'Cause if I thought too much, I'd get sick to my stomach, and I would feel like giving up or throwing up. It was just too tough. 'Cause that is when I realized that even little babies cry. I just tried to erase what happened. That is when I realized that even little babies die, and I had to build a wall inside to keep me from losing my mind. He was only 9 months old, a kid I'd babysit and hug and hold, and I would tickle his toes and pat his head and watch his chest rise and fall as he slept in his crib. And then my dad said late last night, a truck driver hit their car, he didn't survive. And his mom was hurt bad, but his dad is all right. His big brother is fine, 'cause he stayed at the party. Yeah, yeah, Steven is fine, 'cause he stayed at the party. And if I thought too much, I'd get sick to my stomach, and I would feel like giving up or throwing up. It was just too tough. Sometimes things happen when we are small that we just don't have the tools to deal with at all. So we bottle it up and we just don't see how the stuff that we stuff will affect who we'll be. What protects us as kids slowly makes us insane. So I'm trying to dismantle barricades brick by brick in an attempt to set free my brain. Brick by brick in an attempt to set free my brain, and I just hope that my heart is stronger now. So much stronger than it was when I was 12. When if I thought too much, I'd get sick to my stomach, and I would feel like giving up or throwing up. It was just too tough. And I'd sing Daniel again and again and pretend you were just traveling on a plane. Quarter century later, it's still hard to take, but with every red tail light, I scream out your name. Yeah, with every red tail light, I scream out your name. Yeah, with every red tail light, I scream out your name. I say, Daniel, Daniel, Daniel. I say, Daniel, Daniel, Daniel. I say, Daniel, Daniel, Daniel. Baby boy, baby boy, baby boy. Baby boy, baby boy, baby boy. Baby boy, baby boy, baby boy. Baby boy.
Man, when that song ended, I just felt like my heart was out on the floor, just sort of beating in front of everybody, exposed and vulnerable. What an incredible performance that was. One little thing that Kimya told me afterward was that in the course of having that conversation and singing that song, she had this revelation, this kind of recovered memory or whatever, where she realized that she had thought either someone had told her or she had taken it on herself that it was her job to keep Daniel safe and healthy. There's that line in the song where she talks about watching his chest rise and fall while he's in his crib. And she described just sitting there, eyes fixed on this little boy, willing him to keep breathing well before he had his accident. And so, I mean, if you needed anything to cut a little deeper than the death of this poor baby, then, I mean, maybe that's it. I think it goes a long way toward explaining where Kimya is coming from. I'm so grateful to Kimya for having the courage to share that story with our listeners and with all the people at that live show. And she did it because she felt like it was a worthwhile cause. And if you feel that way too, if you appreciate Sound Effect, if the stories on our show have ever caused you to shed a tear or laugh out loud or start a conversation or look at somebody differently, then I hope you'll consider thinking about what that's worth to you and putting some money behind it. Just go to knkx.org or call 877-NPR-KNKX to make a donation. Thank you so much, and be sure to check your feed this weekend for our next show where the theme is Blood Ties, and we'll be back here next week. I'm Gabriel Spitzer for the staff of Sound Effect. See you around.